a Friday edition of Canuck Central. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar. Dan Riccio taking the weekend off, enjoying an extended long weekend for himself. We'll be back next week. But it's Sat and Bick here on Sportsnet 650. And this hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. A fast lunch doesn't have to mean fast food. Satisfy your midday cravings by choosing a main side and a drink for only $15. Yes, $15, served in 20 minutes or less. With Elon, we have Zach producing the show tonight, and we're going to have a lot of fun. We have the mailbag coming up at 5:30. You get them in. Elon's going to read them and have some fun with us here tonight, and we'll see what questions make the cut. So if you want to keep getting them in, get them in. I know there's some in the text inbox have been flooding in.
Yeah.
I know people want to talk about Jim Rutherford, which we'll get to coming up in a few moments.
Oh, no.
We have Yannick Hansen, as always, coming up at 4:30. And Arda Okal from ESPN's NHL coverage is going to join us at 5 to talk about these NHL playoffs, Bick. But it is Friday.
Mm-hmm.
A beautiful day in Vancouver.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, and Jim Rutherford spoke again.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was as eventful as what we've seen earlier this week and the previous week, but... He's on a tour right now.
He is just
doing all the conversations.
What kind of tour is he on, you think?
It sounds like he's on like a Rick Tockett breakup tour. Like he's on like a Taylor Swift Reputation tour, right? That was
greatest
our last
hits.
Tour. Yeah, he's kind of doing the greatest hit tour.
Oh, with that, let's get to...
They are never, ever getting back together.
No, not in Vancouver at least. And that brings us to The Open.
Welcome to The Open.
That's your home. Are you too good for your home? Answer me.
All right. It's where we break down the latest on your Vancouver Canucks. And the latest involves Jim Rutherford speaking. He was on the 100% Hockey podcast with John Shannon and Darren Millard. And it was a fairly good listen because, you know, it was 30, 40 minutes mm-hmm. of 30 plus minutes of Jim Rutherford talking about the state of the Vancouver Canucks. And we know Jim Rutherford isn't afraid of giving a quote and giving his honest opinion or as honest an opinion as possible. And sometimes that's a good thing, and sometimes that may not be as good a thing. But at the end of the day, it's one of those things that we know what to expect when Jim Rutherford speaks, and it is going to cause a reaction. And yes, it's not going to be the same reaction we had, obviously, at the end of the season press conference when he spoke about Quinn and perhaps having a desire to play with his brothers and all the angst about the coaching situation. This one is not being met with that same type of reaction. And we'll see, you know, how our Dunbar Lumber 650-650 text inbox reacts as we continue this conversation here. But he certainly had a few things to say that did raise some eyebrows.
Yeah, and again, continue to reiterate the task that's on hand, that they're going to have to go get some top six centers.
Well, yeah, he said priority is one or two.
Far and away, right?
And they're not afraid of moving the pick.
Yeah. So the plan is obviously very focused and directed in one singular direction. So I don't know if I have any a lot of like, oh, wow, like that's a new revelation. There were just some nice markers of like, okay, that's nice to hear. That's nice to hear. Mainly surrounded around Elias Pettersson.
Okay, well, before we get to Pettersson, yeah. Let's start with Quinn Hughes. And we're going to wrap up the conversation with Quinn Hughes at the very end as well. So stay tuned for that. And, you know, let's just say that we are ready to spend money. a lot of money.
I woke up today and you and I chatted. And I was like, you know what? I finally have, like, I don't know, you guys were talking about... wallowing on Canuck Central here. It's like, you know what? I got to bring some optimism to Canuck Central. So I feel good about just the state of things now.
All right.
And it's got nothing to do with the interview today.
No, it has everything to do with just straight.
We have a plan.
We do have a plan. And it involves a lot of money.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way. All right. But on the topic of Quinn Hughes, here's what Jim Rutherford had to say about Quinn Hughes and the fact that they have him under control for two more years and what his status may be with this team long term. Here's what Rutherford had to say.
Anyways, but as for Quinn, no, I don't have a deadline on that. I mean, I'll say the obvious, he's a wonderful person and a great player, but we do control him for two more years. I think a better way of saying that is we control him for a year and two thirds, because if we get to that trade deadline 2 years from now and it looks like he doesn't want to stay, then we would have to do something at that point. But we are hoping that he's here to stay, and he's the leader of the team and the face of the franchise.
So the timelines we've spoken about is if you get through this year and it doesn't work out next summer, you have to really approach this from their perspective. They don't really want to approach this, at least as it stands. Now, you can say it's a lot different saying this on May 2nd, 2025 versus what happens, say, May 2nd, 2026. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like a lot can happen in a year's time. So you can't necessarily say, well, he said this, he's going to do this. Mm-hmm. But as it stands, the plan is we're not getting rid of Quinn Hughes until the last possible moment. And the last possible moment would be the deadline of 2027.
So it's consistent with kind of what they've always done, right? They play this out to the last possible moment. They want to use as much time as they can. Whether or not they execute anything, like we've seen with the Besser and Suter, different story. But they're using their time allotment the way you should, especially with a player of the caliber of Quinn Hughes. Now, if there's an indication from the Hughes camp, hey, this isn't going to happen May 2nd, 2026, because you're having a bad season, okay, that's going to speed up your timeline. But the way to do it is to take it as far as you can, because if the reward is keeping Quinn Hughes, take it as long as you can.
Yeah. Well, it all comes down to what you know and what you don't know, right? And as far as what he does know, he did say today when asked about, has Quinn ever told you he wants to play with his brothers, Luke and Jack Hughes, especially with the Devils? And he said no. He's never heard Quinn say that, Bic. Like, not to him at the very least. Quinn has never said to him that he wants to play with his brothers.
I guess that's a nice revelation. And yet at the same time, end of season presser. Let's bring this back. Okay, this is the end of season presser, and this is what we heard that like started off this. Oh, is this tampering? What is this? The control and all this sort of stuff. Do we got this? Okay, this is the end of season presser, and exactly what Jim Rutherford said.
Totally agree, 100%. The one thing that we will be sure of, that we will have enough cap space to offer him the kind of contract that he deserves. That's the one thing we can prepare for. And it may not boil down to money with him. You know, he said before he wants to play with his brothers. And that would be partly out of our control, in our control, if we brought his brothers here.
So he says, like he said, that he wants to play with his brothers.
Now, he did mention today that he was joking about the Hughes thing a little bit. So the brothers thing, you're right. I mean, Quinn has said. Now, is he citing the fact that he said that? Because there was that article where he mentioned, of course, it was kind of like one of those questions you would ask somebody, would you want to play with your brothers? Of course, one day.
You're the president of the hockey operations and you're doing your end of season presser and you say it the way he does, to the fans and to everyone, it's going to come off like, oh, he's expressed at some point he wants to play with his brothers.
I wouldn't say damage control today, but it's more about trying to quiet that down a little bit then. Say, yeah, he's never said that to me, which is true. Perhaps he's never said it to him, because I bet you it is true, because if he had said that to him, which means I don't want to be here, is like, and they've said so far that like Quinn hasn't said that and Quinn hasn't made that indication yet. And so it comes down to, what can you do to keep Quinn here long term, which we'll get to here coming up a bit later. But that's on the Quinn Hughes portion of things. So I don't know if you feel better about, you know, what him saying Quinn's never told him he doesn't want to be here or not, but
sure,
that's what he mentioned.
I feel better considering what we're going to present here a bit. I do feel better.
All right, I like that. And the other big thing before even we get to the Hughes stuff is going to be the coach. Now, he was asked, and we're going to play this clip here from Rutherford talking about whether experience matters or not, because this is going to be the big thing. Are the Canucks going to hire a head coach who has extensive or some experience in the National Hockey League? On the extensive side, you have Peter Laviolette. On the less extensive but experienced side, you have Jay Woodcroft. And then you have guys like Manny Malhotra. Mm-hmm. And I will say, Bic, the name that you should not dismiss at all is Adam Foote. I think Adam Foote internally is a big, big option, or at the very least under major consideration. So he's very much on the short list. My question is going to be, you know, just around him. He may have other options too. What does he want to do, right? But I don't think, and when we talk about inexperienced head coaches, because Adam Foote has only had 1 year of WHL experience when he was with the Kelowna Rockets, and he's been with the Canucks as an assistant, and that's his only experience in the National Hockey League as far as coaching goes. So he would also kind of fit the inexperienced head coach, but I think both those guys kind of apply here.
There is an element, too. You would get some carryover as well from the residual talk it glare of like, oh, Quinn Hughes does like Adam Foote as well. So right. That would be a feather in the cap as well.
Yeah, I think would as far as knowing the organization, yeah. I think they look at it from that perspective. Now, anytime you promote an assistant to a head coach, there are some questions whether how effective that is or not. And something we'll ask Yannick about that too when we have him on a bit mm-hmm. later about types of coaches and experience, and obviously his experience with Manny Malhotra, who's also under a lot of consideration. And he was asked about Manny Malhotra specifically and whether experience matters in the coaching search. And here's what Rutherford had to say.
Not necessarily important. You can look at that two ways. And I say this respectfully because there's a lot of really good NHL coaches that are out of work right now. So it's a matter of, do we want to go the experience route of a guy that's out of work now, or do we want to go that route where you bring somebody in that doesn't have the experience, but has experience as an assistant coach, has done well in the American Hockey League, and maybe comes in with some fresh ideas.
So that's on the experience front, which means and the reason I think he answers the question that way is because they may hire a coach who's not experienced.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to sit there and say experience matters because Manny's under consideration. And obviously, Manny right now, they want him to focus on the AHL and the Abbey Canucks, who we'll talk about game one of their series against the Coachella Valley Firebirds yesterday on the road.
Game two on our airwaves tomorrow.
Yeah, 6:50, 6 p.m. Puck drop coming up on 6:50. But it's clear that Manny is very high on the list.
And he did go on to speak as well about the whole AHL development, and as much as they want to develop players, he echoed, like, it's also about developing people and getting people within the organization. So, yeah, it's almost unfortunate that it's 1 year into this for Manny, that it's not...
Well, ideally, it's like you want to wait a couple of years, give him time.
You've gotten your feet wet, now this thing is
the question
come
with,
up naturally.
The question with him is... is it still better to try with him than not? And that's going to be the question. And like we talked about, when you go through the list of candidates, it's hard to get overly excited about anybody else, especially the guys, if you're not getting the Sullivans, who just signed with the mm-hmm. Rangers, and Cooper's not becoming available, for instance. Like, if you're not getting those guys, and you go through the yeah. list, and it's like, who do you feel better about, honestly? And that's when it becomes difficult to kind of narrow down who's clearly a better candidate, whether it is an experienced guy versus an inexperienced guy.
You're not shopping at the top of the list, which
well, they're not.
Seems likely that they won't be. You know, you are getting to the spot where, like, every kind of candidate has a flaw. Like, Woodcroft had playoff mm-hmm. failures because Vegas really outplayed the Oilers. You can go through other guys, and they've all got these individual flaws, even if they might have experience. And that would be Manny's, like, yeah. hole in the resume. It's like, hey, there's not enough NHL coaching experience, even though I think a lot of people would say, hey, like, he'll fill that quickly,
yeah.
and he'll be excellent. But that's the whole. But the thing is, the selling point to me is like the personal investment into the organization. I think that's that. If I'm building out like why a candidate is attractive, that's his unique profile to Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
You would get a really committed and very very like, hey, like this matters.
Yeah.
And if you're mentioning other names, Woodcroft, Lalonde, on and on, David Quinn, whatever you want to bring up, Vellucci. There's guys that are not specific to, like, hey, I know the organization. I know what this market is about.
Mm-hmm.
That's a huge, like, weight to Manny's resume.
Absolutely. And I think it's going to be fascinating to see here. And I think on both guys, like, you know, whether it's Adam Foote, whether it's Manny, they have a say in this, too.
Mm-hmm.
Do they feel like it's the right time to coach this team? And that's going to be a question as well. And we'll see how that goes. On Pettersson, nothing new. He mentioned, though, that he's worked as hard as he's ever worked. Or he mentioned he's been working very, very hard. You felt like that was a positive, just this overall positive posture around Elias Pettersson and how he's working off ice right now?
I know it's not going to, you know, salve anyone yeah. and all the frustrations. It was notable to me because they were very quick all of the time to point out the struggles Elias Pettersson is having.
And what he didn't do right.
And what he doesn't do right. Just the idea that a member of the hockey ops was quick to praise and like, hey, we got this part and this guy's saying this. That to me was like, oh, okay, that's something. you should be working hard, of course. The thing is you can't even give him credit for it, because the only thing he can do now, between now and September, is just work harder than he's ever worked before.
Yeah.
That's all he can do, and he won't even get credit for it, and he shouldn't get credit for it. But all these questions, and you could have teammates been like, dude, like, look what happened this year. Like, I got to play with you. The only thing he can do is come back and be better than he's ever been.
Yeah.
And that starts with all these workouts now, but... it was just like he easily could have just been like, yeah, we're still working on the process and all these things. And because they are very quick to point out, like, he's got to do this, he's got to do this, he's got to do that. The fact that he was willing to praise him to me was like, oh, okay, that's something.
Yeah. And, you know, and my big takeaway is honestly on Pettersson is that I don't care about anything that I said about Pettersson up until next year. Like, actions is what we're going to have to be looking for. We mentioned earlier, he said they're open to moving the first, which is something we've been under the impression of, anyways, for the right player. Of course, you're trying to find a top two line center, did not close a door on Besser. Spoke highly of Demko. They've made tweaks. He's made tweaks to his training regimen. They feel very good about it. And he didn't talk about the contract or anything, but the way he's speaking about Demko, don't be surprised once we get past July 1st, we hear more discussions with the Canucks and Demko. That's when he's eligible to sign an extension, if that happens or not. So
both parties have brought it up at the end of the season press conference too.
Yeah, so something to kind of keep an eye on here with Thatcher Demko. On Tom Bjelander, they didn't say anything he hasn't said before. He said they offered him the same as the 11th overall pick last year, which is some news, right? But obviously they haven't gone above and beyond, at least not yet. But he said he thinks he can play in the NHL next year. And I think that's a sign of like, kid, just sign. You'll be on the main team.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, I think that was a message. It's like, we think you're an NHL player. We don't think you need to go spend time in the AHL. Just come over and play for us next season.
The thing I've brought up too about the bonuses is Danton Mateychuk was the 12th pick and he got 2.25. Axel Sandin Pelikka got drafted after Willander and got 1.5. And I just wonder if there's like a gap here of like, and Lekkomäki got 1.3, I believe, as far as the Schedule A bonuses. There's just a gap here. It was like, well, the 12th overall pick a year before got 2.25. I'm 11th. The guy behind me got 1.5. Come on, like,
yeah,
I deserve a certain level. I'm not going to take less than Axel Sandin Pelikka.
Well, that kind of makes sense because you hear it's around a couple hundred K.
Yeah.
Which, you know, and this is still money he has to earn. It's not like he's being given to him, which again, it's frustrating. But we move off that. That's essentially what he had to say. On Filip Hedl, obviously, he said that they knew they were taking a risk, called them more of a third line center. But which makes me think, like, if he was that much of a risk and all you see is a third line center, like, why was he valuable to you then anyways? But anyways, we can talk about that a bit more down the road over Filip Hedl and how he's going to fit here. But the big question is going to be Quinn Hughes. So honestly, Bick, I look at Tocchet leaving. Mm-hmm. I look at even what Rutherford said at the press conference, and I know he tried to, you know, say nothing. I'm skeptical about Quinn Hughes' desire to stay here long term.
Sure.
But as an organization, all you can do is try. And one thing you have to make sure you do is not let money be the issue. But how do you not let money be the issue? How far can you go? And the question is, and we've brought this up in the past, and we said on the postgame show, Bick, and I brought it up with Dan before too, that to me, there isn't a number that you can overpay Quinn for. As long as it's within the cap, like, I don't think there's a number you can overpay Quinn for. What does that look like, though? Can you actually give Quinn the max? Can you give him $20 million plus when the cap's going to be over $110 million?
So this whole week with everything that's happening and Rick Tocchet leaves the organization, right? It's tough to see a coach just be like, you know what? No. And I've used this phrase a lot this week of it's going to be a moment where the Canucks have to look themselves in the mirror a little bit. And so I started thinking about that more and more, and we're coming to a head with this decision here for Quinn Hughes. And I thought, if you do everything in your power to retain this guy, and he says no, then guess what? It's a you problem. And so I just thought about this more and more. I was like, okay, we're a year away from this. What if you gave him the max? You gave him $22.7 million because that's what it'll cost.
So that's based on the $110 million cap,
yeah,
right?
That $113
million.
So if you gave him the 20%, we've not seen that.
Right.
You gave him the max deal. And he said, here is $180 million. And I know it's a staggering amount of money, but given the way the cap is going to escalate so quickly here, if you gave him the max, you're going to have a lot of money. I think they have $70 million in cap space that season. So if you just said, hey, we'll give you 22.7 and we'll figure out the rest with the $48 million we have left over. And if he still says no, guess what? There's nothing you were going to be able to do.
You did everything you could.
If someone says no to $180 million, then like you've got bigger deep-seated issues that you now have to go correct.
Well, yeah, but also like, what if he just simply wants to play with his brothers?
Sure, but
which
exists,
guess
what? It's
right?
Like, that's got nothing to do with you now.
Right, exactly. Right? So I think that's what you have to do. I do agree with that. I think you have to go as far as you can. I know people think right away, they're like, if you give him $22 million, you're not going to be able to build a cup contender. Which, okay, fair point, but here's the thing. The cap is going up every single season. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, with the cap going up the way it is, not every team is going to spend to the cap anyways.
Yep.
Now, I think what this organization has indicated to Quinn is that they're always going to spend to the cap. Now, that may mean ticket prices keep going up. It may mean the money's going to be, you know what I mean?
My apologies to all the season ticket holders. But like, genuinely.
But my point is, like, I think at least, and it's easy to say now, and we'll see in action when the cap goes well over $100 million, but there are indications being made, I think, to players like Quinn and his camp that we're going to spend to the cap. Like, you know, we're going to find a way to do that. If you do that and the rest of the league isn't spending to the cap, you're going to have an advantage because you're going to be able to spend more than other teams if you are willing to go that far. So yes, the number is big, but if teams aren't spending to the cap anyways, and the cap keeps going up and you're willing to spend closer to the cap than other teams are, then now you have an advantage. And if you're willing to use that advantage, which is monetary, which is also like tough to do, I guess, because an owner, like it comes out of your pocket,
of course.
Right? But that's how you can create a separating advantage for yourself. Are you willing to truly put your money where your mouth is, right? Are you truly willing to go above and beyond? Because a cap was an equalizer. Everyone spent to the cap. That's no longer going to be the case. We talk about this, ownership talks about, like, you know, we spend to the cap. We want to be an aggressive team. With a cap going up in the next few years, they might be able to show that. If they're truly willing to do that, then you can't overpay Quinn because you're going to be able to spend more than other teams. Teams are not going to spend to the cap when it's over $110 million.
And the brand loyalty aspect of it all, like if you lose this guy, hey, like that's going to have an impact on your bottom line.
Yeah.
He's going to get $17 million already. Is $5 million a year worth it?
Mm-hmm.
An extra five? And look, if he says like, look, 20% is too much, I appreciate it. Let's sort out a real number.
Sure.
Great. Every penny you save is fantastic after that.
Exactly.
But commit $22.7 million.
Essentially, you say to him,
make him yes, say no.
Exactly. And so Johnny Mac says Quinn wants to win. That contract hurts the Canucks. Well, if he cares that much about that, then he'll come down a little bit.
But
my point is, don't let money be the issue.
Yes.
And if he truly wants 20%, you pay it. And like, what are you worried about? If you end up winning the draft lottery and you find these next great players, guess what? You're going to have to pay these guys.
Correct.
This is what's going to happen, guys. Like, with the cap going up, you're going to see new players be the highest paid players. It's going to kind of be like NFL quarterbacks, where you're like, you know, this guy's nowhere near the best player, but at the current stage, he's the highest paid player in the league.
And I think
that's going to happen when the cap goes up. So at least overpay the right guy.
It would provide a lot of clarity, too, going into this season, because I think we spend a lot of time looking at this and seeing who's available, and so much pressure gets put into, hey, we have to get this right this season, and it has to work right now. Whereas if you approach and say, if we're already dedicating this money for the 2027 season, can we start putting things in place that we can get out of certain things? So like Atu Ratu needs a deal. Can we just get a three-year deal? And if we have to rebuild with Quinn Hughes anyways, because Quinn Hughes is not going to be here, well, we're out of certain things. P.U. Suter, is that a deal we can get out of after a year? And you can structure this offseason to get out of things by 2027 or 2028. Because if Quinn Hughes goes, you're in a long-term rebuild anyways. So you could and doing like a two-year build to fix this, to me, provides way more clarity and just way more options.
No, for sure. And you know, the point about the cap going up, teams are not going to spend to the cap. There's already been reports, like even like a team like Colorado Avalanche, that they're almost at their limit. The cap may go up to $130 million. They're not going to be able to spend anywhere near it. So that's what I'm saying. If you're willing to spend more than other teams, because that's going to be something that's going to separate teams in a few years. Because the cap's going to go up so much, teams can't keep up, especially middle and lower end revenue teams. They're not going to be able to keep up. Are you willing to go above and beyond? And if you are, you might have an advantage, and we'll see if the Canucks take advantage of that in a couple of years, but we'll see how it all goes. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. It's Sat and Bick. We're going to talk to Yannick Hansen. That's next on Sportsnet 650.